Okay, so this is RTE1, Module 8, which is... Okay, so this is RTE1, Module 8, which is all networking, about networking. Okay, so, the objectives for this chapter are explain the principles of networking, describe the types of networks, describe basic networking concepts and technologies, describe the purpose, so describe the physical components of a network, describe LAN topologies and architectures, identify standards organizations, identify Ethernet standards, explain the OSI and TCP IP data models, describe how to configure a network interface card and a modem, identify names, purposes, and characteristics of other technologies used to establish connectivity, and identify and apply common preventative maintenance techniques used for networking. And the last part is troubleshoot a network. Alright, so chapter 8 is an overview of network principles, standards, and purposes. It covers the following types of networks. Local area network, so do you guys know what a local area network is at all? What it covers?
It's a smaller network of computers that are at least not necessarily in the same building, but fairly close together.
Yep, good. Okay, what about wide area network?
It's like the internet, basically.
Wide area network is like a bunch of networks all over the place.
Okay, good. Now, a really good way to remember this is that, if you ever get stuck, is that wide area networks connect local area networks. So, one wide area network might have many local area networks. Yeah?
Okay.
And then the last part is wireless LAN. Okay, so, and we're covering the following topics, so network topologies, protocols, and logical models, hardware needed to create a network, the configuration, troubleshooting, and preventative maintenance, and network software, communication, methods, and hardware relationships. Okay, so the principles of networking. Who can define a network?
Network is basically a bunch of, well, it's an interconnected system. It doesn't even have to be computers. It's basically a bunch of things that are all connected together.
Very good. So networks are systems connected via links, whether it be wireless or wired connections. So every day, different types of networks are used by people from all over the world. Can you guys think of any different types of networks that are out there?
Yeah, social phone lines are coming up.
Okay, back and we'll record.
Alright. So, yeah, telephone systems one, mail delivery systems one, public transport systems another one, corporate computer networks another one, and the internet. Alright, so there's some examples of different networks that are used from all over the world. Okay, so in what I was just saying above, like, can you think of what you would use like a network for? Like, what would you share across a network? Okay, so no one?
Answers are coming up in the chat, Josh.
Oh, okay, sorry.
You should go in there.
Yeah.
Because people have put things like files, pictures, information, software.
Ah, okay. Yeah, good. Very good. Thanks for that, Sean.
No problem.
Okay, so pretty much a network can span from being two computers up into a network that, you know, connects companies from all over the world together. And like people were saying in the chat, you can send pictures, data, whatever you want, music. So next we have the types of devices you can use on a network. So you can use desktops and laptops, printers, scanners, PDAs, smartphones, file print servers on a network. So to access and store your information. And like, you know, like I said, so if you can store all that sort of stuff, obviously your printers and stuff, you can print to another, all computers can print to a central location, scan from a central location, so forth. Okay, so do you guys know of any different types of networking media? Like, how would you connect the devices to the actual, together? Of, what media would you use?
Routers and cables and stuff.
Yep, so I noticed that someone in the chat said twisted pair cables. That's okay. Rather than I was more meant like the cabling. So you know, you got your copper cabling, like someone there said twisted pair cabling, your fiber optic cabling. Yep. And like wireless connectivity as well. So they're the different types of media. So, okay. So what do you guys think the benefits would be of having a network?
You're able to share more than one computer on the same router?
Yep, good.
Yeah, you've got shared resources so that you don't, each computer doesn't have to have its own printer or scanner or whatever. They can all share one.
Yep.
In the case of wireless, you're not tangled with wires.
Very good. Okay, so, and I've got in the chat, transferring files to and from computers. So, yep. Alright, so very good, guys. So, obviously, fewer peripherals needed, increased communication capabilities, avoid file duplication and corruption. That's a really good one, actually, that one. Lower cost of licensing, centralized administration, and conserve resources. Okay, so next we have the types of networks. A computer network is identified by the type of media used to connect the devices. The type of networking devices used, how the resources are managed, how the network is organized, how the data is stored, and how the area and the area it serves. So if you took all of those different characteristics into consideration, you could identify a network. Okay, so next we have a local area network. So before you were saying, Sean, you had a pretty good idea of about a local area network. So did you want to describe it, or?
I was just thinking that a local area network is not necessarily where all of it. I mean, generally, you think of a local area network as being like computers networked together in a home or an office, and they're. But the difference is they're not connecting, like, organizations together or over as long a distance as, like, a wide area network is.
Perfect. So, yeah, you've described it down to a T. So your home network's a perfect example of a local area network. Okay, so what I've got here is basically a group of interconnected computers that is under the same administrative control. Can be used as small as a single local area, single local network installed in a home or small office. Can consist of internet-connected local networks consisting of many hundreds of hosts installed in multiple buildings and locations. And look, that's another really important point: is just because you hear the word local area network, people tend to think it's on a really, really small scale. You could have a massive local area network, but it's still exactly that, a local area network. Just because it's got, you know, there's no number of computers that define a local area network. It's the way the network's segmented that makes it a local area network. Okay, so just remember that.
And okay, is the now, key part that differentiates it from a WAN, one of the key parts that one person or is administering it, or that there's one place that everything's administered? Because what I'm trying to figure out.
It's more like, I suppose the one place where it's administered is a better example. For instance, like your home network, right? So say you have 32 computers at home, for instance, all connected via a switch. So say everything can be accessed onto that switch or router, whatever. Now, when you get to the internet, that's what makes it a wide area network. So say you have a local area network at your house of 32 computers. Armando might have a network at his house with one computer. As once it hits the internet, it's segmented, so then it means that it's come into a wide area network. Did that make sense?
Yeah, I think I got it now.
Alright, cool. But yeah, like I said, it is important to remember that, what I was saying about the local area network, because it is a pretty common misconception that people think that just because, when you're having 1,000 computers on a network, it means that it's not a local area network anymore because it's too big. Okay, so next we have the wide area network. A WAN connects LANs in a geographically separated locations. A WAN covers a much larger area than a LAN. The internet is a large wide area network, like you guys were saying before. And basically, like a telephone service. Is used to connect multiple to make a LAN. Make a WAN, sorry. Okay, so here's a bit of a scenario for you, right? If Company A had a building in Perth, Western Australia, and Company B had a building in Sydney, say Company A had 64 computers on it, and Company B had 82 computers on it. Company A accesses, which is Perth, accesses Sydney's server to get all their data and so forth off of it. Would that be a local area network or a wide area network?
Be a wide area network.
Very good.
Those are really far apart places.
Yeah, but you guys are getting the idea, right? So,
I think so.
Alright, so wireless devices, so next we'll go with wireless. So wireless devices are used to transmit and receive data using radio waves. Wireless devices connect to access points within a specified area. Access points connect to the network using copper cabling. And wireless coverage can be either in a room and also can be like in a fairly large range depending on the device you use to send the signal. And basically wireless is the same as cabled networking. You can still share the same resources, and now that they've got wireless 300 N out, still fairly fast. So, do you guys know the different speeds of a wireless network?
Yeah, you have 802.11b is 11 megabytes per second, g is 54, and n, I'm not sure exactly what n is. I know it's a lot higher than...
Okay, n, I think n is actually still in draft specification, and it's supposed to be 300.
It recently came out a couple of weeks ago, or like a month or two ago.
Either way, it's supposed to be up to 300, but not necessarily going to be 300.
All right, thanks.
And the thing is, like with most of your routers and so forth that you've got now, you can choose basically, it selects whatever the device you're using uses, so you don't have to say, you know, I want my network to only operate at A or B or G. If your network is capable of doing 300 and you plug a wireless, if you have a wireless device that only does G, or your network will only run at G speeds, whereas if you have one that does N, it will run at N. Okay, so peer-to-peer networking. Basically, the idea between peer-to-peer networking is that you can share files, send messages, and print to a shared printer. Each computer has similar capabilities and responsibilities. Each user decides which data and devices to share. There's no central point of control in the network, and it's best if there are 10 or fewer computers to make a peer-to-peer network. So do you guys know of examples of a peer-to-peer network?
Does that mean that there's no central server involved? Does that mean there's no server involved, that the computers sort of talk to each other on their own?
Not necessarily. It means that everyone's in control of their data. So there's no central
files,
point.
Kazaa, Aries.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're good examples, yeah.
Direct Connect.
Skype even does that, doesn't it?
I think it does. I'm not 100% sure with Skype. Okay, so yeah, they're good examples, those ones. So basically, everyone has their own media, and they share it out to someone else. There's no central point of control for all your data. And also keep in mind that a peer-to-peer network can be as small as two computers. So say you and Armando want to share a file, you connect your two computers together, Armando sends you the file, that you got a peer-to-peer network. Okay, so with this type of network, can anyone think of disadvantages that might be involved?
I would say no administration, because it's just there's no centralized point.
Yeah, each person's on their own. As far as
viruses and possibly FBI finding you.
Okay, you guys are sort of on the right track. All right, so where you're saying there's no centralized administration, can you be a bit more specific on that?
Well, each person is responsible for setting up their own system. So if I'm on one, Armando and I are on a network, we both have to have things set properly or it's not going to work right. And that's each of our responsibility. We each have to do that correctly.
Excellent. So there's one really good point for it. Okay. What about if you had, I don't know, 3 terabytes of data stored on your computer, and say someone broke into your house and stole your computer? What do you do then? You lost all your data. So the point is that
that's true.
You know, there's nowhere that your data is stored, so it's only stored on your own individual computer. You're responsible for it. If it goes missing, then you know, you're pretty much in trouble. As a security point of view, each person must maintain their own security measures. So therefore, it makes it more difficult to administer. And once you add more computers to the network, it becomes more difficult to manage the system. And like I was saying before, with the no centralized data storage, you have to maintain your own backups and so forth. Okay, so client-server networks. So pretty much client-server network model provides security and control for the network. The client requests information or a service from the server. The server provides the requested information. Servers are maintained by network administrators. Data backups and security is done by them. Control of user access to network resources also done by the network administrators. You don't have to worry about that. Centralized storage and services include the obviously data stored on a centralized server. Shared printers managed by a print server, and users have proper permissions to access data. Okay, so pretty much this is the exact opposite of what we're talking about before, and this is probably one of the better systems because everything's got like one central point, so things, it's a lot easier to maintain. So you guys sort of understand that with this client-server network?
Yeah, that makes sense because the server is basically doing the most of the work, and then the other computers just say, "Hey, I need this. Can I have this? Thanks."
Yeah. Perfect. Okay. So, concepts of network networking. Okay. So, pretty much. If you were to work in a technical environment, you'd be responsible for configuring and troubleshooting all computers on the network. You should also, if you're going to work in industry, know how to use IP addressing protocols and other networking concepts. And when you get to like points with like subnetting and things like that, there are calculators out there that will do the subnetting and that sort of stuff for you, but it's still a good idea to understand how they all work. Later on when you guys get to subnetting, if you decide to do Discovery 2, I think it is. Okay, so first thing we'll cover is bandwidth. So basically, who knows what bandwidth is?
I can't quite remember the technical definition that you're looking for. I mean, I've heard the term, but...
Basically, bandwidth covers the amount of data that can be transmitted within a certain time. So, like for instance, your internet connection, example of bandwidth would be, you know, how fast the file is coming down and onto your computer. Make sense? Yeah, 32 kilobits a second or... Sorry, Stacey, what was that?
Grace. I just have a question. Sorry, yeah. Put it into perspective if you don't mind, Josh.
Yeah, go for it.
So does anyone know how much bandwidth they have on their connection?
I'm not sure what the exact numbers are. I know it's fast enough for me, but I don't know what it is.
I know I've got 20 megabits down and 5 megabits up, if that's kind of what you were looking for.
Gee. That's,
yes,
that's
you have creepy. Fios, and we hate you. Just
kidding. Yeah, I echo that. You lucky little...
So we'll go and move over to Rosie's house.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically bandwidth can be measured in bits per second, kilobits per second, and in Rosie's case, megabits per second. It's a good idea to know roughly what speed you're getting. There's a lot of websites out there that will actually measure your speed. A good one that I know of is www.speedtest.net. And that'll measure your speed to what you get. And most routers now will tell you in their software what speed.
I know one thing you have to be careful with if you're doing bandwidth testing is where you are in relation to the site that tests the bandwidth. So if you're in Australia, then you need to find a site that's also in Australia to help you test it. Am I correct on that?
So basically it will give you an indication, well not necessarily, because it will give you an indication of how long it takes to get to the actual server, wherever it is in the world, and it will try and pull as much data as it possibly can off that server. And most of these sites, like, say, you know, it will have a map or something like that on it where you can say, oh, you know, I mean, in Perth, Western Australia, it will try and find the best server for you or, you know, wherever you guys are.
It's also hard finding these things that are accessible. Some of these are
Yeah.
Inaccessible flash, and they're really nasty.
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of people don't follow a standard with making websites and so forth. Okay, so pretty much you've got three modes of transmission. You've got simplex, one-directional transmission. Yes, obviously says that, so goes in one direction. And an example of this is the signal sent from a TV station to your TV at home. The next one you've got is half duplex, which allows data flow in one direction at a time. It's obviously, so that two-way radio is an example of this. So pretty much if you're on a two-way radio, you press the button, someone else presses the button at the same time, no transmission goes through.
Some of the old voice chat clients were half duplex as well. I'm thinking of like Chatterbox.
Oh, okay. That makes sense, I guess. I suppose, yeah, I think like now most, or now I'd say all of them pretty much are full duplex. Okay, so now next we have full duplex, allows data flow in both directions at the same time. Bandwidth is measured in only one direction. So if you have 100 megabits full duplex, it means that you've got 100 megabits just going.
And Josh, you're dropping it.
Sorry, like I was saying, so bandwidth is measured in only one direction with full duplex. So if you've got 100 megabits, it's only measuring 100 megabits in one way. So broadband, such as DSL and cable, operating full duplex. Okay, so now to the next part, we have the IP addressing. Okay, so an IP address is a unique number that is used to identify a network device. The IP address is represented as 32-bit binary number divided into four octets. Okay, an example would be your particular computer where you run right now. I don't know. Anyone know what their actual IP address is for their computer? Is it static or is it?
Yeah, this one here is static. 192.168.1.25 on my LAN.
Okay.
I had to set it though.
Okay, cool. So an IP address is also represented in dotted decimal format, like you were just saying, 192.168. Or I forget the other part you were saying, 1.
Yeah, it's 1.25, but it doesn't really.
Okay. So when a host is configured with an IP address, it's entered in dotted decimal as 192.168.1.25 or .5 or .67, whatever. And it's got unique IP addresses on the network ensure that data can be sent to and received from the correct network device. Okay, so next we have classes of IP address. Anyone know of the different classes of IP addressing?
A, B, C.
Good. Okay, and you also have D and E. We won't really cover those.
Yep, they wrote it in the chat.
Ah, cool.
Do you have your text-to-speech checkbox checked so you can hear the chat so you don't have to go into the other window?
No.
Oh, well, there's a little
chat window,
so you won't have to chat, and you'll just hear the messages spoken out as they come.
It'll make your life so much easier.
Yeah, no, that will definitely help. Enabled. There we go. All right. Cool, thanks for that, guys.
No problem.
Okay, so a Class A network. Where would you use a Class A network, and then anyone can think of the actual definition for one?
Would you use like, yeah, big corporations, organizations?
Good, so large organizations. So for instance, Telstra, which is one of the one of they got a Class B. Yeah, so large organizations. And your Class A networks are usually represented by the subnet mask 255.0.0.0 as a base subnet. Alright, so class B, anyone, where would you use a class B?
So like in small business, well, in businesses?
Yeah, so pretty much, do you guys know, like, the, why would you require a class A network rather than a class B or a class C?
Isn't it faster?
Not quite. Okay, so basically the different classes of IP address mean that you can have more hosts or more people on a given network. So, so more room to create subnets, all right. So that is true if you wanted to segment the network down, yep. But mainly it's all about the hosts. So I think with a class A you can have just over 16 million hosts or something, I think it is. B is about 65,000 and C is something like 254 on each network. And the way you calculate it is, you know how I was saying before that it's all, the IP address is represented as 32 bits of, 32 bits? On a class C, you've only got 8 of those bits that actually represent the network, represent the host, the other 24 represent the network. So if you have 8 bits, it's 2 to the power of 8. If you have a class B, 16 bits represent the host and 16 bits represent the network. So it's 2 to the power of 16. And on a class A network, it's 2 to the power of 24 because 24 bits represent the host and 8 bits represent the network. Does that make sense?
Kinda.
Okay. For an example, right? I'll put it in the chat. If we had something like okay. So that number that just come up in the chat window is a basic class A subnet, right? Meaning that the first bit of 8 is all ones, right? So that represents the network. The rest is all zeros because it represents people that can go onto the network. And if you were to calculate all those zeros, right, as so there's 24 zeros there, if you were to go into a calculator and type in 2 to the power of 24, it'll give you a fairly large number. Alright, so, I'll put in the class.
Whoa, that is a big number. I just put it in Spotlight.
Good old Spotlight, eh?
I think it says 1177216, I think it's it.
Yeah, 16,777,216. That's how many people you can have on a network. And I'll put in the default class C one. Yes, it's coming through now. Okay, so that's a default class C subnet. Okay, so if you compare the class A and the class C, you get that instead of only the first 8 bits being ones, now the first 24 bits are ones and the last bits are zero, right? So if you were to go into your calculator again and type in 2 to the power of 8, what number do you get?
256.
Yeah, so you can see that's a fairly small number compared to the other one, yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, and now the middle one of these is the B. So pretty much where A, like I said, where A uses the first 8 bits, C uses the first 24 bits, B uses the first 16 bits. So it's right, so it's the middle. And I'm pretty sure it's 65,000. Yeah, 65,536. So you have 65,534 usable. people on a Class B network. Alright, so in the window before, I noticed that someone's typed in more room to create subnets. Not to like confuse you, trying to confuse you guys, but with does you guys know how subnetting works at all? Have you heard about it before?
I've seen the term subnet mask, and I guess I've seen the 255.255.255.0, which, from what I gathered from the reading, would be a Class C network, but I don't really understand how it works.
Okay. So, you know how before, when I said to you to punch in the number 2 to the power of 8 into your calculator, and you come up with the number 256?
Yeah.
You know how with the Class A subnet, I said that you got 1111111? In binary, that represents 256, because you have 1 plus 2 plus 4 plus 8 plus 16 plus 32 plus 64 plus 128. Which comes up to 256. Yeah?
Yeah, I think so. I think I remember that order from, you know, math and stuff.
You get to play with that a little bit more in a Discovery.
Fun.
Well, basically, just anyway, the general idea is that that's where your 255 comes from, all those being ones. With Class A is 255.0.0.0, Class B is 255.255.0.0, and Class C is 255.255.255.0. Alright, and like I was saying with the subnets, don't worry too much about subnetting, but the general concept is that all those bits that are zero, you can borrow from and make smaller networks out of the address that you're given. Does that make sense?
I'm not sure.
Okay. So, you know how when I wrote into the chat window, you had one, the first in a Class C, the first 24 bits were all ones?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And the last bits were all zero, or last eight were all zeros?
Yeah.
When you subnet, you add more ones to that. So if you add another three ones, I think you have 24, you can add 24 small networks into that big network. So you have your 192.168.whatever-it-is network, and then you can have 24 smaller networks off that. But like I said, don't worry about it too much, because just as long as, yeah, you know that it's there.
And I guess I understand that you can divide it out, and I guess, is that really all I need to know for now? Is that subnetting does...
Yeah, pretty much, you can
make smaller segments of a bigger network.
Yeah, perfect. That's pretty much all you guys need to know for now. But when you get to Discovery, I think it's, like I said, it's Discovery 2, where you start covering Okay, so next we have subnet masks, which are used to indicate the network portion of an IP address, like I was saying before. They're dotted decimal numbers, usually all hosts within a broadcast domain on a LAN use the same subnet. And the default subnet mask for the three classes of IP addresses that we're going to use are A, B, and C. So 255.0.0.0 for A, 255.255.0.0 for B, and 255.255.255.0 for C.
Can those numbers be different?
Only when you subnet.
Okay,
and
so
you
when
can't
you subnet,
change the 255s are all locked in. You can't modify those. Okay, when the depending on which one of those you've got, that zero can be changed to whatever your subnet is.
Oh, okay. That's what I wasn't sure of.
Yeah, and a really easy way to tell whether the network
be anything different.
No, they're always the same. Now, a really easy way to tell whether you've got a basic IP address, basic class IP address or a subnet of one, is normally after the actual subnet mask written, you have a slash and then a number. Have you seen that before?
I don't think so.
Well, if you do, you'll notice that with, for instance, a class C, it'll have 255.255.255.0, and then there'll be a slash and a 24 written after it. They represent how many bits are in the network portion. Yeah, so on a standard one, it'll be 24. On a subnet of one, it'll be 24 plus whatever the subnet is. Okay, now, with IP addresses, you've got two ways of setting them. You've got manual configuration. In this step, you have to manually configure each IP address and subnet mask on each device. And you've also got dynamic configuration. Now, to do dynamic configuration, you need a DHCP server, which hands out IP addresses, which you guys have you all seen, like on your networks at home. You can either set it statically or dynamically.
Yeah, my router has one in it. I think most of them for home use too.
Yeah, good. So, basically with a DHCP server, your computer actually leases the address from the server, and it's leased for a time period. It can be like 30 seconds up to, you know, 3-4 days, whatever. And after that, then the computer can change the address to something else depending on whether something else is using that address or not. Okay. So next we have network interface card. Network interface card is the hardware that enables the computer to connect to a network, and it has two addresses. Okay, the IP address, it's the logical address, and it also has the MAC address, which is burned into the network interface card, and it can't be changed.
Don't modems and stuff have them too? Like your cable modem.
Pretty much everything has a MAC address. So, DHCP process and advantages. So basically, like I was saying before, you lease IP addresses on a DHCP server. So what happens is a DHCP server receives a request from a host. The server selects the IP address information from the database. The server offers the addresses to the requesting hosts. If the host accepts the offer, the server leases the IP address to them for a specific period of time, which I said, like I said before, can be 30 seconds to as long as you want. And some of the advantages are that it simplifies the administration of a network, and it reduces the possibility of assigning duplicate or invalid IP addresses. This is pretty handy, especially when you've got like more than, you know, 10, 15 computers on a network. Because can you imagine going around setting, you know, lots and lots of IP addresses on a network? And then, you know, coming back 2 weeks later and deciding, oh, you know, I need to change this, and having to go back and reset them all again.
I had to Google to figure out how to do it on the two that I've got.
Well, you know.
So I can't imagine doing it on that many.
Now, another good thing about DHCP is that, especially with a lot of the newer routers and stuff like that now, is that you can reserve IP addresses for given machines. So what it does is, you know how I said before that a MAC address is permanently burnt into the chip on the whatever the card is? Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what you do with your DHCP is you get the... it gets the MAC address, and it will save an IP address for that particular MAC address. So whenever it sees that MAC address, it always gives it the same IP. So it's sort of like, creating a static IP address, but doing it from a central location.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
It's pretty handy, and it means that if something breaks, then you have to fix it in one spot rather than, you know, fixing 15...
Oh, I lost you again.
I said it means that you only have to fix it in one spot rather than in 15 different places. Now, one good rule which I was taught is that if you're going to put servers and things like that on your network, always try and statically set those. Just the servers though, not the actual the systems. Okay, so in Windows, Sean, you were saying before that you had to learn on Google how to set your IP address on your computer. Do you remember how to do it, pretty much, basically, or?
Well, yeah, and actually, one of the reasons I had to Google is first I learned it on Windows, and then I had to go learn it on Mac.
Okay.
But, yeah, you pretty much go find your network card and go into the properties. And I think you have to highlight TCP/IP and then tell it that you want to do it statically in there, and then there's some boxes you have to fill in.
Perfect. So yeah, find the network card, right click on it, go to properties, choose TCP/IP, go to the properties of that, and then you can select whether you want obtain the IP address automatically or set it statically. The other thing is, if you do go into that box to try and configure that, just note that down the bottom there's another radio button that says obtain DNS server address automatically or use the DNS server address that you want to give it. If you check that use this DNS server and you don't put anything in there, or you put a really bad one in there and it doesn't work, then you won't be able to get out onto the internet.
Is it possible to have a static IP and yet have it obtain a DNS address automatically, or can you only do that if you're using a DHCP? I've always wondered that.
No. It will automatically go and find the DNS server. You can set it to automatically find the DNS server. But that's what I was saying. If you change that radio button to do that manually and you put in the wrong one, then you won't be able to get onto the internet.
Okay. I guess what I'm trying to figure out, though... is if you okay, let's say I select the one that says statically assign, or you know, let's give us a static IP address, do I then have to manually assign the DNS, or
No.
Do I have to have them both on manual, or can I put the one on manual and one on automatic?
You can put one on manual and one on automatic.
Okay, that's cool.
If you're gonna set the if you're gonna use static IP addressing, then you have to have static DNS. If you're gonna use automatic IP addressing, then you got to use automatic DNS.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense. In fact, I don't think it'll let you do it. I don't think it'll let you do it the other way, will it?
Nope, that radio button becomes unavailable.
Okay.
Okay, so next we have internet protocols. So anyone define a protocol, or can anyone define a protocol?
It's basically a standard that says how devices are going to communicate with each other, and then if something isn't following the right protocol, then it's not going to work.
So pretty much a set of rules governing the communication of devices, yeah? Or communication. So it says here that many protocols consist of a suite of protocols stacked in layers. These layers depend on the operation of the other layers in the suite to function properly. The main functions of protocols, identifying errors, compressing the data, deciding how data is to be sent, addressing data, and deciding how to announce, send, and receive data. Okay, so does anyone know of any different protocols? Okay, so you've got TCP/IP, IPX and SPX, HTTP and HTTPS, FTP, SSH, Telnet, POP, IMAP, and SMTP. Alright, the basic ones you use, TCP/IP, which is used to transport data on the internet, HTTP and HTTPS, defines how files are exchanged on the web, FTP, provides file transfer. SSH is used to connect to remote computers. Telnet is another one that's used to connect to remote computers, but less secure than SSH. POP is a protocol used to download email messages. IMAP is another one used to download email messages. And SMTP is used to send mail in TCP/IP network. Okay, so they're the basic ones. Okay, so ICMP. Have you guys done before a ping on any machines?
Yeah, I've done a few of those.
So it says here, ICMP is used by a device on a network to send control and error messages to computers and servers. So ping is a simple command line utility used to test connections between computers. So seeing you guys have done the ping tests before, why would you do a ping test?
If you want to make sure that a server is responding or see if your internet connection is working properly.
Excellent.
Or to see if a website's working, for that matter.
Good. So you guys know that you can use either the host name or the IP address to test ping? Okay. So basically all it does just works by sends an ICMP request to a destination. The destination, if it gets the ICMP packet, responds with data so that it knows that it can connect to the remote system or the...
Which is ICMP stand for again? Because I missed it.
Control Message Protocol.
You know, what's the I? It's not. It's not cutting.
Internet. Sorry, Internet Control. Yep. And the standard for this is basically it sends out 4 of these ICMP requests, and the receiving machine then sends the 4 replies back. So you know basically how reliable the system is, and you get like a feedback of 100% or 50% depending on how many packets are received and sent. Okay, so next we have physical network components, so computers, hubs, switches, routers, wireless access points, and your networking media. Do you guys remember what I was saying before about networking media? What are different types of it? No one?
I already forgot what it was.
Okay. So the network is the cables used. So what are different cables that you use?
Oh, okay, yeah, that's right. So are you talking like the Ethernet cables?
Okay, so pretty much hubs. So do you guys know what hubs are?
That's the thing, I couldn't really figure out the difference between, like, hubs and switches and routers, because when I think of hub, I'm thinking, like, USB, and it lets you plug a bunch of stuff into one source, but they all sort of do that, don't they?
Okay. Difference between a hub and a switch. A hub is pretty much a device that gets something in and sends it out to everyone, okay? A switch is a device which gets something in and only sends it to the person it needs to.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Okay, so, like, for instance, a USB hub, if you had a computer connected to the one, you had 7 devices connected to it, yeah? Everything can access the USB hub. So pretty much hubs extend the range of a signal by receiving, then regenerating and sending it out to all other ports. So traffic tracks on the hub.
Yeah, Josh, I think you're going to need to get closer to your microphone or lower your sensitivity because it keeps dropping you out every once in a while.
Oh, okay. Is that better?
Yeah, that should keep your mic keyed up.
All right. So pretty much hubs allow a lot of collisions on the network segment, and are often not a good solution. hubs are also known as concentrators because they serve as a central connection point for a LAN. Okay, so next we have switches. Basically a packet along with its MAC address information is called a frame. And pretty much like I was saying with a switch, what it does is it gets the information in that it needs and then forwards it out to just that specific person that it's sent for using the MAC address of the person. A switch also maintains IP address information. So basically if you get something in on a switch, it checks the IP address table and then sends it to that particular person. Okay, so next we have routers, devices that connect entire networks to each other. They use IP addresses to forward packets to networks. Can be a computer with special network software installed, or can be a device built by a network equipment manufacturers. Contain tables of IP addresses along with the optimal routes to other networks. Okay, so a good example of your router would be your the one you use to get out onto the internet. Okay, next we have wireless access points, which provide network access to...
Are routers like more complicated switches? Are they basically...
I was a bit wrong before when I said that switches contain IP address information. They contain MAC address information. Is that where you were getting lost, like when I said that?
Well, it's good that you clarified that. But I guess what I was trying to figure out is, does basically a switch is sort of a simple router, and then the router does the same job, but just in a more complicated and better way. Is that where the difference is? Because it's hard, because in my mind they sort of seem similar, and so I'm trying to figure out how to separate them.
All right. A good example. All right. So think about your local area network. Right. In a local area network, everything's connected, like, you know, into a switch or a hub, because you're only going. Well, think about a small local area network, like in a room, for instance, right? If you only wanted to send information just around the room, you could use a switch or a hub, okay? Because all you're doing is you're forwarding something from you to the person that's next to you or the person that's across the room from you, right? That makes sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, so now, sorry, go on. Go on, Sean.
Oh, okay, so you're saying a switch or a hub is just for simpler situations, I guess?
Not so much simpler, just for, like a local area network. So, all you're doing is sending information from one person to the next person to the next person, all in the same location. Okay? Now, if you wanted to, say, send information from one room to the next, to your friend in another building or another place, you'd use a router, right? Because what you're doing is you're saying, I want to go from the local area network that I've got to my friend's local area network. Okay? So what the router does is it gets the information from your network it gets the information where it's got to go to, and then forwards the packet on to that particular network.
Thank you.
Which then goes to their switch. Okay, another way of thinking about it would be to say that a switch will connect a local area network, right? A router connects wide area networks together.
So is the reason that we need routers for the internet and our cable modems because we're connecting our local network to the internet, which is the wide area network? Is that why we use those for that instead of a switch? Oh, okay.
Exactly. And like maybe when I was saying before that your router that you used to get out into the internet was a good example, might not have been such a great example because it is actually a multi-purpose router and a switch inbuilt into one.
Yay, the light bulb came on now.
Cool. Okay, so next we have wireless access points. So provide network access to wireless devices such as laptops and PDAs. Use radio waves to communicate with radios in computers, PDAs, and other wireless access points. And have a limited range of coverage. And that all depends on which device you use to connect it. Okay, and this brings me now to the multi-purpose stuff, like I was saying before. So obviously perform more than one function. Your new internet, like, devices you've got, so perform wireless access, they do switches, and they do, like, routers all in one. These are good because it means that you've only got one device doing everything. And you know, you just have to configure one thing, and yeah, so that's what makes them good. So you guys all understand the difference between the three now? Four? Okay, cool. So next we'll go on to the cabling. Okay, twisted pair cabling. So a pair of twisted wires forms a circuit that transmits data. The twisted wires provide protection against crosstalk. Who knows what crosstalk is?
In JAWS, it's pronounced crosstalk. gives you all an idea. Because you probably have not heard it actually said before, unless you're in discussion.
Excellent. So electrical noise or electrical interference between two wires. And what the twists do is they prevent the crosstalk.
Okay. Another thing about crosstalk, and the first time I heard it used, and it's not entirely related, but it might help you to remember that it's interference, is if you've... Oh, my microphone won't stop creaking, so I apologize. If you've listened to the four-track book, sometimes you'll notice that you'll have a little bit of the... Like, you'd be listening to track one, and you'll have a little bit of track three bleeding through. That's crosstalk as well, because the two tracks are next to each other. So that might help you. It helps me remember.
Yes, that's a good example.
Because I'm strange.
Okay. So pairs of copper wires are encased in a color-coded plastic insulation and twisted together. An outer jacket called the polyvinyl chloride, which is PVC, protects the bundles of twisted pairs from getting damaged or whatever. Okay, so there's basically two types of twisted pair cabling. You have unshielded twisted pair, has two or four pairs of wires, relies on the cancellation effect, which is what we were talking about before, for reduction of interference caused by electromagnetic interference, which is EMI, and radio frequency, RF. Most commonly used cables, cabling in networks, and has a range of 100 meters. Okay, a shielded twisted pair. Each pair is wrapped
what
in
that
a
is
mag-
in feet.
328.
Okay, thanks.
Each pair is so this is shielded twisted pair. Each pair is wrapped in a metallic foil to better shield the wires from electrical noise, and then the four pairs of wires are wrapped in the overall metallic braid of foil. This reduces the electrical noise from within the cable and reduces EMI and RFI from the outside, which is pretty much the same as the other cable. So UTP, which is the unshielded twisted pair, has a couple of different categories. And the categories are based on the factors of the number of wires in the cable and the number of twists in those wires. Cat3 is used for telephone connections, Cat5 and 5E. They're the most commonly used in networks, and Cat6 has a higher data rate than Cat5, which is now starting to become the better one and more used one, I think, now. Okay, so next we have coax cable. There's a couple of different types of coax. You have thick net, which is 10 base 5. Coax cable was used in networks and operated at 10 megabits per second with a maximum length of 500 meters. You have thin net, which is 10 base 2. Still also operated at 10 megabits per second with a maximum length of 185 meters. You had RG59, which was the most commonly used for cable TV. RG6 is higher quality than RG59, so it provided more bandwidth, and it was less susceptible to interference.
And those are the ones that have those funny round metal ends, right?
Yeah, with the male and female end, yep.
And the outer part sort of turns and screws and stuff.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so next we have fiber optic cabling. Okay, fiber optic cable is glass or plastic strand that transmits information using light. Is made up of one or more optical fibers enclosed together in a sheath or jacket. It's not affected by electromagnetic or radio frequencies. Signals are clearer. The distance that they can travel is a lot further. They can have much more bandwidth than copper cabling. The cost of implementing them, though, is a lot more because of the fact that they're so much better and so much harder to implement. And the thing is, like, when you go to try and implement, like, fiber optics and stuff, I think you can only bend the cable up to about 30 degrees, I think it is. So you can imagine that you'd have to have, it'd be a pain to try and implement it.
Yeah, and that's what kind of Internet Rosie's using, because that's what Fios is.
Except for up to the last mile, I believe. I think that's kind of a DSL weirdness, isn't it?
Well, but...
Or is it straight fiber?
We're talking about fiber, though.
Right.
Oh, for Verizon, for Fios? I don't know.
Yeah.
Because I know some of the providers, sometimes there's fiber to the curb and then there's fiber to the home. I'm not sure which Fios is.
I'm not sure which it is either. AT&T was some kind of weird hybrid, mostly fiber thing.
Theirs is called U-verse. Because that's what we have here. And if you have U-verse in one place, that's all you can have. So, we don't have Fios here because AT&T has the monopoly.
No, that's not.
I know over here now they're trying to implement a lot more than newer housing estates with the fiber. So basically you have the fiber optic to the actual the hub, and then it goes copper from there on to the house. And because you're not going very low, copper cabling, your speed's just insane. Okay, so there's two types of fiber optic. You have multi-mode and single mode. Okay, now, how are you guys going? Did you guys want to finish there for today, or do you want to keep going?
I just have a weird question about fiber optic. I would imagine they'd make it pretty thick, because I was thinking, well, if there's glass in there, can it break?
Okay, now... Fiber optic, you know how I was saying it's very hard to implement and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah.
With fiber optic cabling, because it uses light to travel, one of the reasons you can only bend it at 30 degrees is because imagine you're going from the bottom to the top, and then back to the bottom, and then back to the top, and then back to the bottom, and then back to the top, and back to the bottom, and then back to the top. That's how the signal's transmitted inside a fiber optic cable. Yeah? Bend that cable more than 30 degrees. One of the reasons you can't is because the signal can't be transmitted properly, and the other one is, if you bend it too much, the glass actually snaps inside the cable. because of the glass, and so forth. Another application they're starting to use fiber optic a lot for now is...
You went away. Josh, where did you go?
Josh, you're not being heard.
Yeah, I think so.
That was just weird.
Yeah, he wasn't speaking for like half a minute.
Yeah, we didn't hear you. We thought you just didn't hear anything.
And there's other people in the chat still saying, is there anybody there? So I don't know if the net's
that was odd.
Gone nuts today or what? Guys, I even asked Grace on MSN, is Josh still transmitting? Because I didn't know.
Hello? Josh, can you hear us? Okay, yeah, we can hear you. Oh, that was special.
Well, I can't. That was weird.
Yay. Okay. Well, I guess that's us for today, guys. Did anyone have any questions that they wanted answered? I don't know what happened to Josh, and I'm not sure, some kind of weird server blip. Oh, he's coming back. Cool. Oh, I think it must be a Cavi internet funny day.
We're still connected?
Yep. Yeah. No, it must be a Cavi thing.
Yeah, because he was talking for about a half minute or so, and or nobody may have hear. Been, but we didn't hear anything. I wish I could have seen whether he was still keyed.
Yeah.
I think the Cisco might have crashed in at work.
Or something. Well, he had just about ended it anyway. So if nobody else has any questions, we can shut down. Oh, here he is.
For how long, though? We don't know.
Hello!
Hey. Sorry.
Did the internet crash?
No, I couldn't hear you guys at all, so...
We couldn't hear you either.
We couldn't hear you either.
Oh, okay. Did you hear what I said about, like, finishing up for today?
Yes.
Oh, okay, good. So I didn't get any response. I thought, don't say everyone's fallen asleep on me or something.
No. I just gotten back, because Carrie, the doctor, had just come and all that.
Ah, okay. Cool. Is he okay?
Oh, yeah, they just put him out about it.
So we finished recording now, right?
Yeah, I'll stop recording.